So that was like pretty much a perfect segue into my talk. So my name is Sarah, and I'm part of the program that basically consists of the scientists who are doing art, and it's from that place that I want to give a little window into some of the experiences that I've had in terms of developing as an artist and as a scientist, how those two worlds began to collide for me, and how they got me excited about unconventional science communication. And then I also want to talk a little bit about some of the sort of underlying principles that I think that make the performing arts a particularly powerful device for connecting and communicating with diverse audiences in all kinds of environments. So up in Canada, I conduct research on water-repellent soils. And as an experimentalist, I study water-repellent soils. But when I'm not doing that, I work as an independent musician, where I spend the bulk of my time as a singer-songwriter, and I write songs and I tour the U.S., Canada, and internationally. And I play in clubs, I play in cafes, I play in theaters, sometimes schools, and festivals. And aside from the art expression parts of it, one of the things that I really like about songwriting and performing in particular is that it gives me the opportunity to really interact on a very personal level with people from all kinds of different walks of life. And while I really enjoy that exchange as an artist, when I started hijacking my shows with science content, I found that I ended up having a lot of science conversations post-show. And that made me really happy, because as we move further into the 21st century, science communication is becoming really important, and that's because without it, you can't have a healthy science culture. So the Council of Canadian Academies defines a healthy science culture as one that embraces discovery and supports the use of scientific knowledge and methodology. And they put a paper up or a report up on their website in which 37 countries were evaluated for their science literacy. And one of the questions that they asked the respondents was if they knew that the Earth traveled around the sun. And as Jay Ingram points out here, he's a science communicator in Canada. He says, well, 87% knowing that the Earth goes around the sun's pretty good. That still leaves 13% of Canadians that haven't absorbed the scientific knowledge of several centuries ago. Ah, what happened? Whoa. Ah, stop, come back. Ah, okay, here we go. So this kind of raises the question of, in terms of what kind of limits might exist in terms of wanting to connect with an audience on a science level when some basic science knowledges are not sort of well understood. However, I think that there's a real opportunity, and what I've discovered is that there's a real opportunity and need as science practitioners and science communicators to increase curiosity and appreciation of an engagement with science and science knowledge. Because as I see it, in the 21st century, simply doing science isn't enough. We're facing some incredibly complex challenges that are fundamentally grounded in science knowledge. Communication is the reason why we publish. It's why we're here attending conferences such as this. It's why we speak to other scientists. The problem tends to be that's just where our communications stop. We're already doing it. We're just doing it with an audience that that understands us and that we feel safe communicating with. So the most tired example of this disconnect is really, illustrated by this consensus gap with global warming. And it really just points out that some important stuff is just not connecting. It's just not getting through to the broad audience. And this is in spite of a very large quantity and availability of some very accurate and very reliable information. So the question to me seems to be, why can't science and scientists get out from underneath this? And what can I do to get out from underneath this, particularly when I view the public as our best allies in terms of eliciting positive change, both in terms of funding research, developing regulations that serve society, and taxpayers, they really also deserve this transparency, and they want this knowledge. They're hungry for it to some degree. They give us a lot of money to do this work. So as it turns out, combining the arts and science as a means to communicate and connect with broad audiences is a particularly powerful approach. And we're seeing that in a lot of the talks today, which has been really, really interesting and inspiring to participate in. So this is why I think, or this is a thing that sort of resonates with me, why scientists aren't necessarily getting out from this communication sort of, or this connection problem. So one of the advantages that I see as being a scientist is that I'm not a politician. And that in part makes me and us trustworthy as reliable purveyors of data-driven, accurate, reliable information. However, that challenges us or can challenge us in the communication department. We're trained and comfortable working with skepticism, incredulity, doubt, negation. And the language that comes from that place, that comes from those places, is very comfortable to us. As it turns out, Randy Olson, he's done a lot of work on this. It turns out that when the broad audience, while they respect a science perspective because it's testable and grounded in truth, they don't necessarily get the delivery, particularly when the news is bad and particularly when scientists aren't necessarily sensitive to style. So style is the stuff that a lot of people have been talking about today. It deals with all kinds of senses of perception, suspension of disbelief and wonderment, positive and negative. It's what's experienced and felt and intuitive. It's very complex, but it fundamentally comes from information that we receive or experience in our head, our hearts, our guts, our groin, and in the case of music, in our feet. So what the arts have known for essentially forever is that when the broad audience engages with this large, nebulous, complex stuff, i.e. the kinds of scientific and ethical challenges that we're facing in the 21st century, they turn to style and guts and instinct to simplify that stuff. But the arts have been delivering and communicating the complexity of human experience forever. And the arts are able to communicate that in really digestible ways precisely because of a sensitivity to style. In fact, I think on a human level, we all know that style is sometimes the only reason why we pay attention or tune in and stay engaged, science or no science. Style is the stuff that accesses much more than the intellectual parts of ourselves. In performing arts, a dynamic performance is one that makes you laugh, it's one that makes you cry, but fundamentally it makes you feel something. It can also change your perspective in a really non-threatening way. And it's from this space in the realm of science communication that I think a great opportunity lies. So, Julie Andrews is definitely a hero of mine. But my journey into sort of helping the medicine go down, as it were, started a few years quite by accident. I spontaneously wrote this song called The Mighty Molecule. And it basically assigns a lot of science language to human interactions and human experiences and relationship functioning. It's a sing-along song. It's got a catchy melody. And the cool thing about it is that when I wrote it, I really had no idea the impact that it would have. I just started playing it out. And when that happened, people would laugh over lines that were, like, really, really jargony. And then they would sing along, and then they'd, like, look at each other, and they'd smile. And it blew me away. I had just used these three vocabularies that were available to me, so that of a songwriter, that of a scientist, and that of a human being. So I wrote the song, and people started coming up to me after shows and asking me what kind of scientist I was. They really wanted to meet me, they really wanted to know me, and they really wanted to know what I was thinking about. A year or so later, I wrote Prehistoric Sludge. And this was a song inspired by hydraulic fracturing that I wrote for a song contest. So year by year, over lots of years, geologic scales of time, pools of these dead animals formed in pockets and combined. Some would sink into the muck or just get covered up, and it's all those old dead animals we love to combust. So I'm a folk musician. So given my background in hydrogeology and soil physics, I thought I'd be able to give the song a robust scientific treatment. But I also, it was really important for me to maintain the artistic integrity of the song because there's this thing about songs. Just like science, it doesn't matter, erase that just like science part. it doesn't matter how scientifically accurate something is. in the world of songs, if it is going to make a contribution as a song, it has to make a sonic and a lyrical contribution in its own right. If I want that song to be listened to and shared, it's no different than a science contribution being shared amongst colleagues. So I put these two songs, which is about 10 minutes of material, including their setup, into a show. And a lot of times that setup would include me introducing other scientists who are colleagues of mine who would come to the shows. And people in the audience really couldn't help themselves from making eye contact with each other, from smiling, from talking to each other, even as the song was happening. And quite magically, I really discovered how I could throw a bunch of technical words that had little or even a negative meaning to a whole range of people and not lose them. And even more, they were experiencing science in a way that put a smile on their face, had them tapping their feet, and had them connecting to the people around them, and they were fundamentally happy. And what I discovered was that simply exposing people to science language and framing it differently worked as this really wonderful segue into a more meaningful interaction with science and scientists that were in the audience. Somehow, I'm not totally sure, but the music seemed to soften the sharp edges. With the arts, there's this understanding that you don't have to get it all, and I think in a science context, that's a powerful thing to be able to equip an audience with. And what I began to see was that the technical content was not so much the important part of it, but the conversation that developed as a consequence of those songs and the interaction with those songs is really what became the important thing here. So this whole thing has really started me off on a path to combine science concepts and language in strange contexts with strange art associations to engage people and get them talking so that they feel empowered to develop their own science literacy, to share their own science histories, their own knowledges, and connect with scientists in ways that are authentic to them. I'm a believer that an interested and an engaged public will become an educated public. People will seek out a teacher when they're ready for that. My job as I see it is to simply just respect that, try and inspire some curiosity, and let nature take its course. So, impact assessment. We are scientists. So a couple of years I've been doing this. I play about 50 shows a year, and that generally that amasses to about a live show audience of about 6,000 people per year. I've given 3 talks of this nature. And then here are just some responses from people about the work. Okay. Okay. So this is my last, content slide. And this is a graphic that came from a study in which people self-reported the activation and deactivation of certain regions of the body when they are exposed to words, stories, and images that elicited these emotional responses. So if in the back you can't see it too much, we've got happiness, love, disgust, surprise, sadness, and depression. And this is just to show that while emotions might not necessarily always be a part of the conscious discourse of science among scientists, it's certainly a part of the social discourse of human beings. And if we want to truly affect change in the general public, accessing more than just the intellectual parts of their humanity is where I think a great opportunity lies. Most scientists are already artists in some capacity. We're just generating a different form of art, whether it's a new experimental approach or whether it's a new piece of knowledge. But we're also artists. We are storytellers. We are poets. We are, as we've seen today, we are songwriters and performing people. And until the robots take over, we're human beings too. So thank you so much for listening. I do have a few CDs available if you are interested in that. And I have a poster talk in 15 minutes as well. So thank you.